It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. Sandy Rios with you this morning, coming to you live from the Phoenix Park Hotel, right down in the center, in the heart of Washington, D.C., for good or for ill. This is a great location, and this is the place where Hold Their Feet to the Fire happens every year for the last 11 years. And I'm sure I've been close to this seat or in this floor of this hotel with Dan Stein for the last 11 years for this occasion. Good morning, Dan.
Sandy, welcome. So glad you're here. Always an honor.
And it's an honor for me, Dan, honestly. I'm happy to be with you and always honored when you guys include me and ask me to come. Dan Stein, by the way, is the president of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, the premier organization that tracks the statistics of the effects of immigration on the country. And every year we talk about that. You know, Dan, when we first convened 11 years ago, can you go back in time and kind of describe what was happening? What was the impetus for doing that first radio row?
Well, of course, a lot of people had felt after 9/11 that Congress had probably gotten the message we were going to control our borders and reduce illegal immigration. Certainly 9/11 suggested a whole lot of really important changes were needed, right? I mean, the hijackers had phony driver's licenses and legitimate driver's licenses, and they had student visas that were approved even after the fact. But by 2006 and 7, it was clear Congress wasn't moving as fast as they could, and the Bush administration wasn't all that aggressive. And suddenly in 2006, they're talking about amnesty again. And 6 and 7, and there was some legislation coming through that was going to present another mass amnesty and a bunch of illusory, phony enforcement promises in exchange for an amnesty. So a lot of folks said, look, we can't do this again. We're just going to have to really leverage the forces. And look, your listeners are hugely important in this country, hugely important component. Talk radio, where many of America's most informed voters listen every day religiously to know what's going on. And so this is a power pack punch of grassroots action around this national consensus. We need our borders secure. We need immigration better enforced, interior enforcement reinvigorated, all kind of coming full bloom to look, wow, Donald Trump rode this issue to the White House against every conceivable obstacle, and here we are today.
You know, Dan, I actually do remember very well that first radio row, and I remember it was just absolutely unimaginable that the American people could have spoken so strongly on their views about whether we should secure the borders and enforce our immigration laws. And then it looked like we were not going to be able to prevail. It looked like both houses of Congress were going to cave. The president, as in Bush, was going to cave. And really, I believe it was radio. It was talk radio.
Yep, yep.
And the impetus that you guys started with us talking about it and stirring up the people, and they flooded. They flooded the lines in Congress, and we stopped it. We didn't think we could, and we did.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, immigration policy has become one of the most important electoral issues in this country. And you could see how, because Donald Trump used it and because the Democrats, which have so radically changed on their positions from where they were 20 years ago, Hillary Clinton left this huge vulnerability in the Rust Belt states in Michigan and western Pennsylvania and Ohio and others. And Donald Trump understood that on the immigration issue. He used it very effectively. And, of course, now we have promises. I mean, everybody who's coming to Radio Row today is getting a list of these promises. We have this man's marker. He didn't just
run. Speaking of Donald Trump.
I mean, they didn't talk about immigration in the third debate, second question. Okay, this was a marquee component of his campaign banner, pillar, right? That along with trade were the twin issues on which he rode to the White House.
Is there any way to quantify? I mean, you and I, we assume, and I think it's a perfectly logical assumption that that was a huge reason he won. Was there any quantification of what effect it had on voters?
Well, there certainly were some polls and tracking polls that showed many of the people who voted for Trump voted in favor of him because of the immigration issue. And there's even been some recent post-election analysis done, not necessarily by friendlies, if you will, but who said to the extent that many blue-collar voters in many of those states voted for Obama in 2012, they shifted to Trump primarily on the immigration issue because of its impact on jobs as well as some of the trade issues. And Hillary Clinton walked away from an issue that her husband instinctively understood you shouldn't walk away from. And Obama sort of laid down the field, if you will, for this electoral disaster. Not that Hillary was a great candidate by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, Trump came up with, probably for the first time since Teddy Roosevelt, a thoroughgoing analysis of everything that needs to be done to restore control to the American people, who comes into this country and how many people. And so we got a list of 10 promises, right? Building a wall, end catch and release, no tolerance for criminal aliens, sanctuary city funding has to be blocked, unconstitutional executive amnesty is going to be repealed. We're about 50% there, but Trump seems to have broken half of that promises on the deferred action for childhood arrivals component. Suspending the issuance of visas for any place where you can't get proper screening. Well, but for the overzealous members of the judiciary, he'd be nailing that, right?
Right.
Ensuring other countries take people back when we order them deported. You know, finally we see the State Department actually putting the pressure on other states and saying we're going to suspend your immigration program if you don't take back your bad criminals. Because, you know, this has been going on in many countries for years.
You mean international states,
yeah.
Like other international countries.
International
yeah.
states
yeah.
like China
yeah.
and Cuba right. and others that refuse to take them back. North Korea. Getting some action on this biometric entry-exit visa tracking system so we can finally deal with visa overstayers. He's issued an executive order to start putting that in motion. It's slow going, all right? Also, E-Verify, which is verifying work authorization
Again,
at the work site.
We're going through his list of promises.
Right. These are things
just
he promised.
Yeah.
And then he also said we were going to move back toward a merit-based immigration so we don't have so many poor immigrants coming getting on the dole right away. I mean, we have a 19th century immigration program and a 21st century post-industrial economic superpower, hopefully still. And like we're bringing in so many people who don't have the education and earning power to, if you will, they become a net cost to society just by virtue of their poor earning power. And like historically, going all the way back to Massachusetts, 1685, you don't bring in people who don't have the earning ability to carry their weight, okay? And yet this has been a cheap labor. The big problem is you see in the Congress, the Republicans are squishy. Now, why is that? Because these big Wall Street cheap labor donors putting pressure on who's going to pick the onions, who's going to do the dishes, or the engineers. I mean, they use foreign labor.
Who's going to clean our houses? Who's going to do our yard work?
Yeah, to lower labor costs, to reduce labor costs, reduce wage pressure. And now the middle class has disappeared, and that's not surprisingly. The immigration issue is going to be dealt with one way or the other. Now, it's either going to be dealt with responsibly and reasonably, or it's going to be, you know, decided in the streets because the public's going to get so frustrated with, you know, total inaction.
You know, Dan, I'm out and about a lot in different places geographically. I'm sure you are, too. And there are, when you're in Washington, D.C., or if you're in, like, Dearborn, Michigan, or if you're in, I don't know, Orlando, Florida, Los Angeles, and I could go on. It's often like a third world country. I view Northern Virginia, D.C. It's just, it's amazing. It's just amazing. And then I go to other parts of the country, and it still looks like America. Nothing has changed. English is heard, and things are running smoothly, and bathrooms are not. Listen, I'm being very in politic here, but as a female, I find, you know, bathrooms have just become unbearable because I think a lot of the people coming in just don't know basic hygiene, don't know how to handle modern amenities. And so, but for some of the country, it's not a reality. For those of us that live in the middle of it, we see the changes and we're saying, no, we've got to control this. We've got to assimilate people. We have to teach them all kinds of things in order to make this work. But some people in parts of the country are not experiencing this. And so, I was just in Minnesota and Madison, Wisconsin recently, both of them. Very, very liberal areas with intellectually liberal thoughts about immigration. It's not kind to stop people from coming in. We have to, you know, embrace multiculturalism. You fill in the blanks, but they don't practice it. That's not what you see in Madison, and that's not what you see in Minnesota. So, That's another problem that we have.
These latte-licking lefties who live in these luxurious, behind-walled communities like Mark Zuckerberg, you know, they're more than happy to...
Or Paul Ryan.
You know, the point is that the numbers coming in are just unmanageable. And if they're coming in at rapid rates and don't have the education and earning ability, then you create these sort of these little ghettos or enclaves. And economic mobility only happens in a tight labor market. Well, how do you get a tight labor market when you continue to basically import a new generation of poverty every 10 years? And if we would just bring the immigration levels down, now there's a bill in Congress that Donald Trump has sort of embraced. I mean, this is a great opportunity, right? Maybe once in a lifetime. The RAISE Act that Senators Cotton and Senator Perdue have introduced.
Senator Sonny Perdue.
It's not Sonny. Sonny's agriculture.
David
Perdue.
Yeah, they're
good. Thank you. I haven't had my morning coffee. The RAISE Act is a really important bill in the Senate. Trump has sort of embraced it, but that would reduce overall immigration, make it a more merit-based, skills-based, right? Because unless you have at least a tech degree or some postgraduate, you really don't have the income-earning power to avoid, you know, all the different transfer programs, school lunch programs, nutrition programs that people here illegally or otherwise immediately eligible for. It's a good common sense bill would give the American people some relief, so the legislation is there. How do you overcome not just the left, but the Chamber of Commerce and people, Paul Ryan, bless his heart, he's obviously, you know, drank the Kool-Aid, the Jack Kemp cheap labor Kool-Aid.
Lives behind a wall in a very safe place in Wisconsin.
We are, as a result of our pressure, listeners, they are starting to move some bills to the House floor. Lou Barletta had a bill that got passed yesterday, the other day, on checking verification eligibility in health care. And there's a couple bills coming up this week, Kate's Law. And another anti-sanctuary law, which are positive. But it's kind of a piecemeal thing. I mean, the best approach, of course, would be the administration said, this is our omnibus package. This is all the stuff we want. Maybe they're going to include a DACA adjustment at some level. But if we got a lot of really, really good stuff in exchange for that, you know, this is what compromise is all about. But in the end, this piecemeal approach, this fragmented approach, doesn't provide opportunity for unified messaging, which is what we really need right now.
It needs to be an all-out assault. This is a window of time. I'm with you. And how would you grade Secretary Kelly, Director of Homeland Security, and his performance on these issues?
First of all, he made a decision to, he was kind of pushing back on Chris Kobach as either a deputy or serving under Chris Kobach as secretary. And He promoted a deputy who's kind of a career person, and he admits he didn't, you know, he would have voted for either one, Hillary, but he's not but he's a professional. What it boils down to, what's the mission? How do I get it done? But he's not somebody who's attuned to the immigration issue and sort of connected to the grassroots impetus that created voter mobility in favor of, in this case, Donald Trump. And so, you know, he doesn't really have the root of the true believer in him. And so it would be, you know, what you really need in that position to help Donald Trump is someone who's can drive.
Yeah.
The policy debate with the passion that's needed to move this stuff over the line.
Well, and of course, his lack of passion plays out in the appointments. It's the same thing I'm hearing from every agency, Dan. It's like the people in charge of appointing the actual personnel are not on the same page with Donald Trump's promises. And so many times they're just not doing anything or they're undermining him. I think we're just lucky anything's getting through, to be honest with you.
Well, for the first time in American history, somebody actually managed to kind of take over the nominating process. Remember, the Republicans changed the whole rules. They front-loaded Florida because they thought it was going to, you know, everything was for Jeb, maybe Marco, but Jeb. And the whole thing blew up in their face. You know, think of Trump as sort of like an outsider who penetrated the apparatus and took it over. This is really almost historically without precedent in American
really
history. The fact that he has a bunch of hostiles.
The apparatus is surrounding him.
Yeah, they didn't change. They're still in there and they've got their agenda, and where they don't agree with Trump, they're not, you know, obviously we see they're not speaking with one voice as a party.
Still, there's a lot to be grateful for. I think, people coming across the border, it's down. And of course, what the Supreme Court just ruled in favor, at least in part, of Donald Trump's executive order. So there's the music, Dan.
We're
always run out of time. You and I have to talk more than just once a year. But I do appreciate your expertise. We appreciate all that the Federation for American Immigration Reform has done and is doing on behalf of the American people.
Oh,
where would we be, really,
doing.
Without what you've done?
What a great show.
So thank you
always
so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you. All right. Well, coming up next, Michelle Malkin. So you want to stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Okay, guys, who's got the lawn chairs?
Check.
Bug spray?
Right here.
Sunscreen?
32 gallons of sunscreen. Check.
And God We Trust wristbands?
Wristbands? Check.
The American Family Association's In God We Trust wristbands. They're an effective way to remind those you see this summer that America's heritage is one of trusting in the one true God. Take some with you to the beach, picnic, or your family get-together. Since 1977, your American Family Association has been a voice to remind America that the blessings of our nation have come from God's gracious hand. Request your free wristband today and order more to give away. Why not get 40 in honor of the American Family Association's 40th anniversary? The In God We Trust wristbands are available at afa.net/trustgod.
Shark repellent.
Check.
What? Mom!
I'm just joking.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
6 years. The Republicans have been promising the American people for 6 years they would repeal Obamacare. But all they've given us is one excuse after the other. And now they've done it again. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced an about-face on the latest repeal and replace plan, deciding to delay the vote on a new health care plan until after the 4th of July holiday. Now, if memory serves me correctly, the reason we gave the Republicans a majority in Congress and the reason why we put a Republican in the White House was to repeal Obamacare. Not repeal and replace, just repeal. Period. But as incredulous as it may be, I'm afraid we the people are about to be snookered. Again. How is it possible we the people elected a bunch of morally deficient, callous backstabbers? We may as well have been better off with the Democrats in charge. Well, I don't really mean that, but you get the point. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Oh, Sandy Rios back with you, and we are coming to you live from the Phoenix Park Hotel here in D.C. This is like really close to all the studios. Like if you do Fox or CNN, you just walk down the block and... So if you want to get your makeup done, Michelle Malkin, that's the place to go, right?
And that's
you just
what
did
I did
it.
This morning.
No,
I saw.
Like,
I got to get those Fox lashes on.
I know. I should have stopped by. But anyway, it's really good to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time.
You too. It's great to catch up with you,
yeah,
Sandy.
You left. You know, when I first got acquainted with you, Michelle, was way, way back in 2001 when I was president of CWA. That was a long time ago. And you were not, you had not fled west yet. Were you living around here then?
Yes, yes. Yeah. We did the whole swamp thing, and we were on the Maryland side of the border. And
the real swamp of the swamp.
Yeah,
the swampiest
right.
Swamp.
Yeah, that's right. Montgomery County, Maryland. And yeah, we became refugees. It's been about 9 years, and we've loved living out west. We've settled in Colorado Springs, and our kids really became, you know, true Coloradans.
How do you feel that because people know you, so I don't need to say too much, but Michelle, you are steeped in the issues. You are brilliant in your approach to them. You must live and breathe them. You're blogging all the time. You've written, I think, 10 best-selling books, and, you know, you're all over this. But to change your environment, your living environment, did that help your mental health in any way, just to get out of this swamp?
It did, and that was a huge thing, was to really put our family first. And, you know, James Dobson's out in Colorado Springs, and focus on the family is exactly what we did. And I think that especially this year and this past campaign cycle, it validated my decision. When people become so consumed by partisan politics, what do you end up with? Well, the shooting that we saw with Steve Scalise and the House of Republicans. There's so much more to life, and literally the swamp can be soul draining. And it was good to come out to Colorado and move where there's fresh air.
Yes, I totally agree. All right, well, I don't know the answer to this one. You write about a lot of things, but not long into your public life, it seems to me, you really started talking about immigration. You zeroed in and honed on into this issue and barreled down on it in ways that other people hadn't. Why? Mm-hmm. Why that issue? Because there were so many choices.
Yeah, that's right. It was personal. My parents came here legally from the Philippines in 1970, and it really was about making sure that we preserved this privilege. And my parents always taught us that it was a privilege, not an entitlement, to be in this country. It's something that I came to appreciate very early on in life, and it never wavered. Even when I went off to a far-left, radically progressive college, I went to Oberlin College in Ohio. I thought I was going to be a classical pianist. Ha, ha, ha.
There's still time.
Yeah. That's right. Tell that to my mom. And so those foundations, I think, were strengthened, especially when I went out to my first newspaper job in Los Angeles.
And so you started as a writer.
Yes, and a reporter, particularly on the impact of illegal immigration in Los Angeles and California. Of course, the backlash against open borders unfortunately failed in many ways, but it was the grassroots activists. And by the way, who are the strongest proponents of immigration enforcement? Well, they're people like my parents and me, you know, first and second generation Americans who treasure that privilege to be naturalized in this country. And we appreciate that this country should be discriminating. That's become a bad word, to be picky and choosy about who you let into the country.
You know, that's actually something I want to talk to you about. I mean, I find myself wondering, how do we get to this place where you cannot protect the borders of your country? You can't ask any questions about the kinds of people coming in or whether they should come in. You can't complain about the fact that your tax dollars are going to support endless amounts of people coming in and their families and their aunts and their uncles and their grandparents, you know, and that there's an endless stream. You don't dare complain, or you are labeled all fill in the blank.
Yes, that's
hater,
right.
You know, phobic of some sort. How do we get to that point?
Wow, that's a complicated question. I think partly it is the dominance of radical identity politics in our school system, in Hollywood, in the media, and this idea that you can be proud of every identity category except for being an American, right? Somehow citizenship is like verboten. We can't talk about that.
I think the kids and even their parents now don't even know what it means to be an American. They can't even define it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we don't teach civic virtue. Mm-hmm. We don't teach the historical foundations of this country anymore. And look, that's the left. It's the impact of Saul Alinsky over the last 30, 40 years in the schools. And of course, you know, along with immigration, education is one of the big issues that I've covered over the last 25 years. And it's not just Common Core, you know. The problem, the political problem, of course, is none of these things could be achieved, this sabotage of American principles and American sovereignty, if it hadn't been for capitulation and an alliance between open borders progressives and open borders Republicans. You've got these corporate special interests that I've been identifying since I wrote my first book, Invasion, in 2002, and leading up to my most recent book related to the foreign guest worker racket called Sold Out, which I co-authored with John Miano, who's a former software programmer.
I've interviewed him before.
Yes,
yep.
He's fantastic, who actually experienced the ways in which corporate special interests were stabbing the best and brightest American tech workers in the back. And the collusion between the open borders left and the open borders right is the recipe that has spelled disaster for so many hardworking Americans in this country.
Okay, well, we could talk a long time about how we got here, and
yeah.
All those things are the answers, plus a whole lot more.
Yes,
you know. But we have a new. It's a new day, Michelle. Maybe not as new as some of us would like it to be. But we have a kind of a window of time here. And on the spectrum of, you know, HB1 visas and illegal border crossings and refugee resettlement and all the things, fill in the blanks, the problem, illegal immigrant crime, how do you feel the Trump administration is doing so far?
Yeah.
In general.
Well, I'm a hard grader, and I think that for effort, they get an A. But in terms of the priorities that he laid out during the campaign, building the wall was that top priority. And, I mean, even here at FAIR, these grassroots activists who've been at this a long time have tried to manage their expectations. But, you know, the name of this conference is Hold Their Feet to the Fire, and that's what we need to do. I do give Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who's one of my favorite patriots in this country.
He used to be here every year.
Every year, that's
I don't
right.
think the Attorney General will show up this year, but he's been here every year.
No, but I like the fact that we have him in the White House.
Me too.
And he needs all the support that he can get. And with brilliant policy advisors and analysts and strategists like Stephen Miller, that we know we've got a voice in the White House like we've never had before. And the voices of families of illegal immigrant crime who have been snubbed by so many of the Republican Party elite, not just the media, not just the Democrats.
Just sit there just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
The Kate Steinle parents of the world, and there are lots of them now,
yes,
whose kids or family members have been victims, being snubbed.
Yes.
Being snubbed.
Yes.
By Republicans.
Yes.
I mean, I just want people to just sit. I mean, I get angry too, mm-hmm. Michelle. I talk about this all the time. It's really incomprehensible.
It is incomprehensible. And so, you know, I have to remind myself every morning that I just appreciate that we are in a place that is BTH, better than Hillary.
Me too. I say the same.
Right?
Wait, I didn't use those letters, but I do think about that. I think, okay, yeah, but it's not Mrs. Clinton droning on and on. I would just be, can you imagine? And it's not just that. It's not just her affect, which I'm not crazy about, but
right.
It's more importantly, the policies. We would be on a freight train to, I just say hell, honestly.
Yes.
In terms of religious freedom, in terms of immigration, everything, you fill in the blanks.
That's exactly right. And so I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of, unrepentant Trump bashers who've lost that perspective. And I think being ensconced in the Beltway or these coastal bubbles in Manhattan and their, you know, salons, their fancy salons in Manhattan, they lose sight of that. And there will be electoral consequences for that strata of the Republican establishment who have as much lost touch with the, you know, ordinary American people as the Democrats in Hollywood and the media have.
Well, one of the first things they did since President Trump has been elected is pass through that big, I don't know if they called it an omnibus, it was the short term, so the CR.
Yes.
And didn't fund anything, didn't fund the wall, didn't, you know, just were not willing, you know, just completely pretty much ignored what he had said on the campaign trail. Now, he can't write checks. Congress has to authorize the spending for the things he wants to do. So we have to keep that in perspective. He can only do so much if they won't pay for it or pass laws to support him.
That's right. And then when they go and fund everything that the American people don't want funded, like the refugee resettlement racket, which Paul Ryan, unfortunately, has been crusading for as long as he's been in Congress.
With Luis Gutierrez.
Yes, his best
arm
bud.
Arm in arm, his best bud, the open borders socialist.
Yeah.
I mean, go figure.
It's, well, you know, and that, and I actually talk about that a little bit in Sold Out. We report on Paul Ryan's roots, you know, with a lot of the open borders left. And I would hope and think that at some point Donald Trump rues the day that he endorsed Paul Ryan over, you know, an incredible pro-sovereignty challenger in Wisconsin, Paul Nealon, who, you know, really would have been a great replacement for that swamp creature, Paul Ryan.
I totally, well, we could go, there's a whole lot of swamp creatures who've been reelected and good people defeated. I think of someone leading the Senate right now who had a good challenger also. But
yes.
Anyway, I digress. All right, so what is the thing that most encourages you that President Trump has succeeded in doing?
Yeah.
At least in the months that he's been president, it has happened. What?
Well, I think that there are a lot of things that are going behind the scenes that are not going to make big drudge headlines or, you know, front page news or be on cable news. And that is sort of the almost mundane business of cutting back the size and influence of government in our lives. And these are issues that, you know, are important to people out west or in the Rocky Mountain West, things that are going on in the EPA and the Department of Labor and regulatory reform. And, you know, it kind of makes people's eyes glaze over because, you know, it doesn't make for a great cable news 3-minute debate. But, you know, I look at the team that he has brought in of so many people, you know, even at the Department of Homeland Security, okay, maybe we're dissatisfied with the progress of things like the wall or being stymied by, you know, the courts that have stolen our sovereignty on things like the travel ban. But there's a morale change, and you'll hear it from a lot of the Border Patrol agents and people who work in the DHS infrastructure who are here at the FAIR conference at Hold Your Feet to the Fire, that are inspired because they feel that they finally have a president who's going to put America first unapologetically. It is a matter of tone and emphasis and triage almost.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think of the sheriffs. The police officers, I think there's the Border Patrol officers, law enforcement, there's got to be more of a spring in their step because of tone, even
yes.
if nothing. And I think they are actually emboldened to enforce laws that they have been concerned about enforcing before because of punishment by the Obama administration. So there has been a change. There are some big disappointments, though, like
yes.
The failure to repeal DACA, the Dreamers Act. That's a big disappointment, isn't it?
It is. You know, maybe for the strategists inside the White House, it's just a matter of, like I said, prioritizing. I'm trusting Jeff Sessions and Stephen Miller and the Patriot wing. Of the White House, I call them to understand the strategy here. I mean, I want it all, and I want it done now. Right.
Well, it is a window of time.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what 2 years is going to bring. I mean, this would be the time to get these things done.
Yeah, you know, and there, like I said, there are things that he could do. He could, you know, completely freeze the refugee numbers, and you know, there's been a lot of sort of fuzzy math about, you know, whether the Trump administration has, practically reduced the number of refugees since they've been in office. And there's kind of a lot of statistical legitimate there. But he could be doing more. There's no question about it. And the issuance of visas for spouses of H-1B workers, for example, I mean, it just goes on and on. He could freeze every foreign guest worker program, L-1, B-1, the F-1 program. And these are things that are not being done, which is why a lot of people feel like they've had to take their matters into their own hands. My co-author of Sold Out, John Miano, is a lawyer who's, you know, brought a lot of litigation to the courts. And it's incredible and it is horrifying to think that American workers are not granted standing in these cases when you look at the travel ban and some random, Middle Eastern person is able to claim standing in American courts.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's just bizarre. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, Michelle. Do you think, all right, you think Stephen Miller has the president's ear on? Is he the person inside the White House that's talking about these things? I know Stephen, too. He's fabulous. Mm-hmm. You think he's got the ear of the president?
I think so, and especially if you listen to some of the speeches that Donald Trump has given on.
Stephen wrote them, right?
Yes, right. But, you know, there's a lot of, we've seen some of the headlines. I can't really believe everything that we read in the fake news or nearly fake news. But, you know, there's a lot of internal conflict within that White House. House, and I think it behooves those of us who believe in immigration enforcement and putting America first to back that patriot wing in the White House.
Absolutely. Michelle Malkin, by the way, I should have said, Michelle is also now with Conservative Review. Mark Levin's project works with Daniel Horowitz, who, of course, you hear on this show all the time, and just one more hat that she wears and really doing yeoman's work, female woman's work, to really restore the country. Michelle, thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
There were added that day about 3,000 souls. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The day of Pentecost concluded with 3,000 converts being added to the initial body of 120 believers. Then that 3,120 spent time together daily, going to the temple and interacting in each other's homes. They devoted themselves continually to the apostles' teaching, fellowship, sharing meals together, and praying together. The 3,120 that made up the early church came from Turkey, the Middle East, and Africa, and included Arabs and Romans. In addition to the geographic and ethnic diversity, they also spoke different languages. Yet they were made one family in Christ Jesus. Scripture has the answer to the issues we face today.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
We at American Family Association are committed to making a difference and keeping you informed about the things you care about. We have already been greatly successful in bringing about change for the better by providing you with important information about things like current legislation and petitions that can affect your family. Text the word MYAFA to 41411 to get involved. Every week, you'll receive text messages with all the details you need to help make a difference for the kingdom. Text MYAFA, that's all one word, to 41411.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others every day on AFR.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As we speak, the world is reeling from yet another virulent cyber attack. It started in Ukraine and is holding data for ransom and interfering with services across the globe. What if the target of such cyber malevolence instead were the United States' electric infrastructure? Ukraine's has been blacked out twice by hackers, and there's increasing bipartisan alarm that, given our own reliance on the internet to monitor and manage electric power distribution in this country, our grid is highly vulnerable to catastrophic computer-inflicted damage. President Trump has made upgrading our infrastructure a priority. He has recruited Rudy Giuliani to help ensure its resilience against cyber attack. And just last week, 19 Democratic senators wrote Mr. Trump demanding cyber hardening of the grid. We must secure the grid now against all hazards, including but not limited to computer-delivered ones. This is Frank Affney. Learn more at securethegrid.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Oh,
Sandy Rios back with you again. We're coming to you live from the Phoenix Park Hotel in downtown the District of Columbia. And you missed a good interview just then, right during the break, but now I'm going to have Sheriff Tom Hodgson say everything he just said to me. He's the sheriff of Bristol County, Massachusetts, and he joins us from Radio Row. Welcome, Sheriff.
It's great to be on your show, Sandy. It's a very popular show, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. You know, when I have to tell you, you know, Massachusetts isn't a strange place to meet. Strange, I mean unusual, unknown. When I was president of Concerned Women for America, and we don't have to get into this topic, but I'm just telling you, gay marriage, of course, was huge. And Massachusetts was the first state to pass it. I went to speak at Boston Commons, and I spoke at Faneuil Hall. And I got to know the politicians in Massachusetts during those times, and then, of course, paid a lot of attention to what's going on. So when I think about you trying to enforce immigration laws in blue, almost like blue, deep blue Massachusetts, I have to say, there must be some conflict for you in that state.
Well, as I was telling you before we went on the air, I grew up in a family of 13 children, so I'm used to conflict, you know, and getting kicked in my shins. But I've also, look, going back to our previous governor, I've always believed that when you take an oath of office and you accept the responsibilities of that office, you have an obligation to do, not based on party politics, but based on what you know is right for the people. You need to stand up and you need to speak out, regardless if you're outnumbered. And I think over the course of 20 years as a sheriff, they started to realize I'm not going anywhere, and I'm also not going to be any less quiet about any of these issues. I remember when I was trying to get I was fighting for secure communities under the former governor who didn't want it in Massachusetts. He said, he was, of course, publicly going after us in the paper, and I had two other sheriffs that came to Washington with me to try to become 287G people, but ultimately they weren't doing that, so they allowed us to become secure communities. I asked to move Massachusetts up on the list. Well, I got a call from a border agent out in San Diego when he saw it in the paper and said, "Sheriff, I just want to tell you something. I'm a border agent out here in San Diego, and every day we have about 20 coming across the border illegally. We lock them up. We can't hold them, so we take them to court, give them a summons, and never return. But that's not why I'm calling you. I'm calling you because you need to know that out here, when they get out, the word is go to Massachusetts. That's the place that you can go and not worry about anybody going after you." And so this went back and forth, and I was saying publicly exactly these kinds of things and why it was right for the people, so we keep them safe. And when it came time for our supplemental appropriations to be given for the 14 sheriffs, all the sheriffs got 100% of their supplemental appropriations except for me and the two other sheriffs I took to Washington. Ours were cut by 50%. And but it didn't bother me because I said, "Listen, you can do whatever you want to do. I'm going to survive. I'm going to find ways to make it work." And ultimately, in the end, that governor got 5 bad editorials. Even the Democrats called me up and said, when they heard what he did, "Please don't do anything publicly. Let us try to handle this first. It wasn't right. It was Bush League what he did." And frankly, as a Republican who's outspoken there, I only talk to the people, and I let the Democratic legislature know, you do what you think you need to do, but you need to understand something. This isn't going to be something that's going to be done under your dome in the cloak of darkness or through some sly backdoor way. It will be public. And I've used that since I've been in, and thank God I grew up in a big family and knew how to talk to people and talk to the press and tell them what was really going on. And consequently, I get elected by Democrats and Republicans.
Well, I was just going to ask you that. You know, sheriffs are elected by the people directly. I don't know that parties even get that involved. So the people have been electing you for 20 years in Massachusetts. Is Bristol County particularly conservative?
Oh, no. It's particularly liberal.
Oh, no. Isn't that something? See, they talk a good game, don't they?
Yeah.
But they actually want to be protected.
Yeah, and you know, that's why the president is absolutely on the right track and he's doing the right things. He has continued to say that our fundamental responsibility is to protect the safety and security of the people of this nation. And I can't thank him enough or say enough about him in that regard, because he has really stepped up to the plate, and particularly around immigration, said, you know what, we are not going to allow people to pick and choose what laws they want to follow, particularly elected officials who don't like certain laws, and say, hey, we're only going to enforce part of this, you know, they got the sanctuary city thing in violation of 1324 and on and on. We can't have that in America. And when we do that, we're basically saying to the people who are respecting the laws of the United States, waiting to reunify with some of their family members who already came here legally, waiting their turn, we're basically saying, what a bunch of fools you are. Respecting the laws of the United States, waiting your turn, doing it the right way, shame on you. You should have come in with the rest of them and come in here illegally. What kind of a message is that to the people who do things the right way? It undermines our system.
Well, of course, and we are a nation of laws.
Yes.
We are a nation of laws. That's what sets us apart. We actually honor our laws. And in other countries, third world areas, it operates by bribery, you know, and by brute force.
Yes.
And, you know, so do we really want that? You know, we know somebody who knows somebody, and that's the way we get through the airport line or, you know, or get into the... I mean, we don't. We are a nation ruled by laws, and good laws, laws made by the people's representatives, you know.
And the laws themselves, Sandy, to your point, the laws themselves are really the framework that protects our democracy.
Exactly.
If you don't have those laws and you start to break them down, you break down democracy and you break down the republic.
Well, I would permit me an editorial remark, but when I'm talking about being a Christian, I always, when people talk about these nasty and convenient laws that God lays down, I always say these are boundaries for our good. We're truly free when we stay within the boundaries. Then we can enjoy freedom. It's when we completely ignore boundaries that chaos ensues, which is what we have. But Sheriff, in Massachusetts now, how would you describe it? I know there's been a lot of Latino immigration in Massachusetts, but I haven't been there in a long time. What are you seeing? What's the makeup now?
Well, we have a lot of Dominican. We have a lot of Latino. In my area, Massachusetts has the largest Portuguese population, you know, except for California. We have Brazilian, a lot of Brazilian down and around Cape Cod, who are here illegally. But we have quite a few Guatemalan, who are very much involved in the fishing industry in New Bedford and places like that. And what's important for people to understand is that we are basically creating a whole new opportunity for people to be victimized, to bring crime into our communities, whether it's the illegal themselves that's getting victimized, because the Americanized people are now having more targets to go after and even weaker targets that they otherwise might have. Because the people aren't going to go maybe report it, or they know that they're carrying cash every Friday when they leave the fish houses and they jump them. And then you've got human trafficking, Sandy, and sex trafficking in this country are out of control. Out of control. And mothers are giving their daughters birth control pills before they hand them off to coyotes because they know their daughter's going to get raped at least once. And when I hear people say, you're helping these children, really? When that child gets to the border with no family to support them, pushed off to some community in Massachusetts or somewhere else, doesn't understand the culture, may never learn the language because they don't have a rudimentary understanding of their own, put into school with the trauma they've already experienced, no one to help them deal with that, they become the target of all the bullies in the classroom. They go leave their neighborhood, leave the school at the end of the day or on the weekend, walk out inside their foster care home or what have you, and they step on the street, and here we go again. They get victimized again by the gangbangers. And I talked to an immigration attorney who I've known for years, and I was talking to him about this, and he said, Tom, you know what? You're right. He said, I can't tell you how many people, girls I know, young girls who have been impregnated by these gangbangers. So when I hear people say, oh, we're helping these people, you know, they're running from crime and violence in the community. Really? Well, where do the kids in Chicago run? Mexico? Where do they run? You know, why don't we start dealing with the issues in our own country and strengthen our immigration system so that it is an opportunity for people to come here when we have more opportunities and jobs and so forth.
In regard to law enforcement, my understanding is, and I think you're probably illustrating this, that the sheriffs are the ones that have really been on the front line of defense. It hasn't been the police. The police have their hands full, but they've been restricted so much. It seems like the sheriffs are the ones... even on the issue of Sharia and what Islam is all about, have been the ones who've been really plugged in and clued in. Would you agree with that?
No question
about
it.
And why would that be so different?
Well, let me tell you. First of all, the chiefs are appointed by mayors.
Police chiefs.
Police chiefs. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, those chiefs...
are political.
Their jobs depend on the mayor.
Yeah.
So if the mayor wants to create a sanctuary city, the chief may find, and not in all chief situations, but in many... we have to face the reality of human behavior. they're not going to be looking to get knock themselves out of a good job, right?
Right.
So as well-intended as all these chiefs are, they also have to deal with that part of it. So they try to work with their mayors. So that the sheriffs are elected by the people.
By the people.
And the sheriffs, and I've told this to all the sheriffs that I've spoken to across this country, we are the most trusted office, elected office in the nation. Because people know that we aren't looked at as Democrats, Republicans. We're looked at as the standard bearers of their safety. So when we speak on issues, they know that we have we're dealing with this community, that community. We know intimately the issues. And that's why it's so valuable for the president and his administration to have these tentacles out in the community through the sheriffs, because we know the systemic issues.
All right. So tell me then, is the president listening to the sheriffs?
The president is absolutely listening to the sheriffs, and he is, and as is the AG. And this has been a very complex, difficult problem to try to solve through legal maneuvers around detainers and things like that. But the president has said, I am 100% behind you. He just did it out in Reno. He just did another live video presentation, and said, you all have my back, and I promise you I have yours. And he does. And he has the people's back, because he knows that we want the same thing he wants. And we've been yelling for it for a long time. And some of these legislators have tried to put even the sheriffs in these situations with ACLU and them trying to say, well, we're gonna sue you if you hold somebody after
like
they get...
Sheriff Joe?
Yeah, of course.
Joe Arpaio?
Yeah, and he's from Massachusetts originally. I didn't know if you know that.
Oh, you know, I should know that. I've interviewed him a bunch of times, but I'd forgotten.
Yeah, yeah. And he, look...
Tough man.
But you know what? He was what I like to call the quintessential elected official who didn't worry about the politics, he worried about the people.
That's right.
And we need more of that in this country. We need people who to stop, put their finger in the air, and figure out which way the winds are going. Because the people now, whether they're Democrats, Independents, or Republicans, Donald Trump got elected for that exact reason. People have said, I'm tired of people parsing their words. I'm tired of these people going to Washington and fighting with each other, sitting on the floor like little children, protesting about things that aren't even true. Standing in the chambers, hands up, don't shoot, creating narratives that never happened, and doing everything but what every one of us expected them to do. What would they be doing if they weren't sitting on the floor for an hour, acting like little children, protesting, or putting their hands up? What does that say to our children who turn on the television, see the leaders of this nation sitting on the floor like little babies, protesting about something that they didn't like or wasn't even true? It's the unraveling of our society and civility.
Are you encouraged by President Donald Trump? I think, you know, are you encouraged by the things he's done on immigration and the borders and enforcing the law? And do you sense that the sheriffs, let's say the sheriffs, have a little spring in their step after his election?
I don't think there's any question about it. And look, I am absolutely encouraged what the president's done and is doing. He is one of those rare leaders who doesn't owe anybody anything coming into the office, and he's willing to stand in there and fight to do what's right, not for himself. He doesn't need anything. He didn't need this job. But you know what? He said, I can make a difference in America, and he's doing it. And he's doing it outside the typical political sort of blueprint that everybody's always followed around, well, I'll trade this for that or whatever. He's saying, no. NATO, UN, you're going to pay your way. America, you're going to get protected, and we're going to make sure your families are safe. And you victims of this illegal immigration, you've lost your family members, I'm not going to sit idle and allow that to go on. We're going to make sure that we don't have any more people lose their loved ones. We're going to do the right things here, and we're going to bring in accountability back into government, into our communities.
We have 1 minute left or less. If you had the president's ear today, what would you tell him?
Well, who knows? I may today, but if I did, I would tell him, first of all, thank you for what you're doing, for standing up for America, for working with the sheriffs and rallying us to finally be able to do what we want to do collectively as leaders in this nation in support of what he's doing.
Well, hats off to you, Sheriff. What would we do without men like you laying it on the line?
Well, I tell you one thing. We wouldn't be able to do any of it without people like you, because, Sandy, you're getting the word out to the listeners. and they need to be told about what's really going on so they can make their ultimate decisions.
We're all in this together.
We are
Americans trying to save our country.
Yeah,
and I make
God
no apologies
you.
For that. God bless you, too.
Thanks for everything
you're
doing.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning. We'll see you tomorrow here at Phoenix Park Hotel.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.